You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, there's lots of things going on in the news right now that are just things that are big things. And one of them is the talk about the setup of General Flynn.
I am really interested in learning more about that. I have been following it very closely. I had feelings from the beginning, once the FBI got involved in this thing and seeing how the FBI got involved in it, I had some real concerns as to the due process and the nature of the investigation and how the investigation was being conducted at that time.
Yeah, well, Andrew McCarthy wrote a really great article, it's quite lengthy, on explaining everything about this. And so I want to talk to you about some of those things because I find it fascinating and really disturbing that our FBI and indeed President Obama's administration were complicit in this entire setup of General Flynn.
We'll just go back over the selections for the United States Attorney General and the FBI director that Obama had made. Okay, so we had Jim Comey as head of the FBI. We had Eric Holder, who was a complete embarrassment to the United States Department of Justice, as our Attorney General. And then when he left the office, he, meaning Obama, picked Loretta Lynch, who was equally problematic as far as credibility was concerned. Okay,
yeah.
Just remember the whole thing on the tarmac during the Hillary Clinton investigation, and all of a sudden in Arizona, at what's the name of the big hub that we go through, Skyport?
In Phoenix?
Yeah, Phoenix. And so she has a private meeting with President Clinton. What the heck's he doing there for 20 minutes with his security detail, which was completely inappropriate given the fact that the FBI was supposedly investigating Hillary Clinton at that time.
Yeah, well, there are so many reasons why that administration was the most unethical, I believe, in history. But for what they did to General Flynn, the question is, why did they do it? Well, the whole Russiagate thing started before Trump actually became president. So it started during the election process where they didn't think that he would be elected, but he was, and they were all in shock. So remember that Peter Strzok and Lisa Page had said that they had a backup plan, right?
Right. They had what they called it, an insurance plan. Strzok and Page were lovers. They were having an illicit affair. Both were married at the time. And I mean, that's just a sidebar. But if you take a look at the hundreds and hundreds of text messages between them, you could certainly make an excellent argument of implicit and confirmation bias against Flynn and also President Trump.
Oh, sure.
So, I mean, that's just ridiculous and has no place in any type of forensic investigation, be it civil or be it criminal.
Well, the Obama administration and some people in the FBI did not want President Trump to be president. And they were going to take matters into their own hands as best they could and make it look as though there was this Russian collusion to interfere in our election. Well, they knew all along that that was not the case, but they had to try to make a case. And what they did, basically, is they, after President Trump was elected, they, of course, came up with that fake dossier. And
well, the Steele dossier.
And Comey was continually telling Trump that he was not under investigation, which was a lie. Well, Trump's administration, not being a politician like most everybody else that we've had as a president, and not having all of those people that are used to being in the political game, Trump's administration at the very beginning was, you know, basically loyalists of his, not politician people. So they took advantage of that, and they wanted to keep this going, and they wanted to destroy Trump and his administration, and that was the goal. So the only person that was in the administration that could stop them was General Flynn. He had been in politics. He knew the ins and outs. He knew what they could do and what they couldn't do, and he would have been the one that would have stood in the way of them proceeding to try to destroy Trump with the Russia collusion game.
Well, and let's go further about that, because Flynn, as a four-star general, used to work for Obama.
Yes.
All right. And then Obama fired him. But Obama did something that I believe is the first time that this has ever happened in a president's administration, is that he personally had a discussion. He went out of his way, meaning Obama, to have a personal, confidential conversation with Trump, telling Trump not to bring this guy into the administration. So already he was trying to thwart Flynn's ability to come in to the Trump administration and act as a security advisor or a security director.
Yeah, and the only way that they could pull off their entire scam against Trump was if Flynn would go.
Right, so they needed to get him out of the way.
So they needed to get him out of there. And there's plenty of evidence now that President Obama was in on this, that Susan Rice was in on it, that Biden was in on it. They all had a meeting that happened in January that talked about it, and the CYA memo, or cover your behind memo, that Susan Rice put out was that President Obama said he wanted to be sure that as we engage with the incoming team, we are mindful to ascertain if there is any reason that we cannot share information fully as it relates to Russia. Well, the whole Russia thing was a hoax. And this was a cover her behind and their behind for meeting about what was happening. Comey took advantage of kind of Trump's naivete in being a politician, and he went ahead and set up this meeting with his team, Peter Strzok and the team, to go ahead and meet with General Flynn with the intention of getting him to lie. And this all had to do with a conversation that he had that they had already had a recording of.
And what they were intending, deliberately intending to do, is to circumvent presidential involvement in this. In other words, you have to go through a protocol in order to interview, you know, people that are going to be in an administration or are currently in an administration. It's just part of the whole due process setup that they do between the different branches of government. And they didn't follow that at all.
Right. So what they did is, in having this conversation with him, that with Flynn, that was just supposed to be a conversation, they didn't go through the protocols, as you said. They talked to him about his conversation with the Russian Kislyak. I'm not saying that right. But they talked to him about that. And, you know, talking with somebody at a time when they're not expecting it, when, I mean, I don't remember what I say from day to day, but they wanted to put him in a box about, did he discuss this or that with this Russian?
Well, they wanted to devise what's referred to in the business as a perjury trap.
Exactly, a perjury trap. And they wanted to throw the Logan Act at him, which has never been used in history,
correct,
never been successfully used. So basically, this is what they did. And then they went to the vice president, and they told the vice president that Flynn had lied to him. And all of that was just absolutely not true. Ask anybody, I mean, everybody who would be listening can think about, if somebody asked you about a conversation that you had, I don't know, 6 months, a year ago, with somebody in the millions of conversations that you have with people, are you going to remember every single solitary thing that you said without getting your due process, which would be the norm for the FBI to do, which would be to refresh your memory by letting you hear the tapes, which they already had.
Or by letting you have counsel present.
Sure.
Okay.
But they lied about their reason for the meeting. So basically, they set up Flynn to get him out. And then I believe that they also threatened persecution or prosecution of his son.
I don't know that part. You know more than I do.
You know, and I don't know that part, so I won't speak of it. But basically, they needed to get Flynn out because he was the only one who would stand in their way of going forward with this whole Russian collusion business. And, you know, when I think about it, Ron, the country would have been saved so much heartache, so much just commotion that we've had in the Trump administration, if these people had been honest and ethical to start with, and if Flynn had been there, we never would have had this whole fake Russia gate hoax that we've had, and we never would have spent the millions and millions of dollars that we've spent on people like Mueller, and, you know, I mean, this went way out of control in an attempt to overthrow the president of the United States.
Yeah, I think that's really clear, and I think the people with you know, Trump derangement syndrome and the Trump haters are going to back the progressive left, and they think nothing about the FBI doing something like this. When they forget that the Federal Bureau of Investigations and the United States Department of Justice are created to be independent investigators that really are supposed to be of the highest ethics and morality, because they are supposed to define the justice system that we have. And the problem that I have with this, very succinctly, is that we are seeing during these last few years especially, and I think it's been going on for quite some time, but what I see as an investigator, as a retired law enforcement officer, is that there are two tiers of justice. There is the one tier of justice for the rich, politically involved and influenced elite that protect themselves in a variety of ways. They create their own legislation to protect themselves. They have power, they have wealth, they have influence to protect themselves. And then you've got people like you and me and General Flynn. And General Flynn has gone completely bankrupt. Not only did he get released by the Trump administration, but he went completely bankrupt attempting to defend himself. And that hurt not only General Flynn's reputation, but it severely hurt the welfare of his family, damaged his family, damaged his children.
And Bill Priestep, who was the counterintelligence chief at that time, he had expressed deep misgivings. And that is where that note came from that everybody has seen on the television that said, what is our goal here? Is it to get him to lie? Is it to get him fired? What is our goal here?
Right. And by the way, neither of those goals are legitimate and ethical and moral goals of any investigative agency.
Right. So his note asked if the goal was to get Flynn to lie so we can prosecute him or get him fired. The problem is, why did he not stop it right there in its tracks? He asked the question, but he let it go forward. And all of these people, in my opinion, need to be prosecuted.
Well, I think there's a lot more to be coming forward on this. And American citizens need to take heed, because whatever they can do to someone with a 35-year-old history of being an American war hero and defending this nation his entire adult life, they won't think twice about doing something like this or worse to someone like you and me.
No.
You ready for a cup of coffee?
I am.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our 4-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa, We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, you got your coffee?
Got my coffee.
Me too. Listen, I've got another burr under my saddle, and I've had this burr under my saddle since this whole COVID-19 thing started. And that is, and I'm railing against it on social media and amongst my law enforcement colleagues. And that is the what I refer to as pandemic politics and pandemic policing. So the one thing that we need to remember is we need to follow the science. Whatever we do in this country, and whatever orders, edicts, suggestions, directions, or laws, and laws have not been created so far. It's been, you know, presidential authority. It's been gubernatorial authority. There have been no laws created, all right? But that needs to follow the science. That needs to follow the forensics. It needs to follow objective facts as best we know them. And that's not what's taking place here with regards to what I believe and many of my law enforcement colleagues, learned, experienced law enforcement officers, attorneys, investigators, forensic scientists, medical staff people that I work with on a daily basis. We are almost unanimously of the opinion that the local and the state governments are way outside their wheelhouse on this, and creating governors and mayors are creating edicts and orders and directions that clearly are intrusive on the constitutional rights of American citizens.
I totally agree with that. It is getting out of control in a lot of places. And just on a human note, I think that, you know, we need to let people have more freedom than this locked in their houses and nobody can go to work. I understand that some limits should be made for the preservation of the health of the nation. Okay. But like you say, I think that we're out of control with it without letting people go to the beaches or national parks in certain areas or state parks or local parks. It is pretty much out of control. And at the end of the day, Ron, you have a legal side to it, and I'm just looking at the human side to it, that there is a lot more family violence calls right now because of this, because people are locked up together. They're frustrated, a lot more suicides. There has been murder suicides inside households more so than usual under these stressful conditions. So I think that at the end of the day, we as adults need to make a decision if we're going to go to the grocery store or if we're going to go sit at an establishment and chit-chat with our friends. I mean, if I get sick, that's on me. I'm not going to go pass it around. But at some point, you know, I mean, we need to stop being treated like two-year-olds in this country and understand that although some people don't have common sense, most people do, and they are rightfully afraid of getting this, and they rightfully want to do the right thing. And give us some credit here.
Well, I'm angry about this on so many levels and disappointed with law enforcement on so many levels. And, you know, the first thing, I mean, full disclosure, and I think all of our followers and listeners know that I'm not an attorney, okay? I work with attorneys every single day. I work with state attorney generals, Department of Justice. I mean, all sorts of legal authorities every single day. I'm in court frequently. I'm testifying frequently on police practices and issues such as constitutional rights, specifically surrounding the Fourth Amendment, which talks about protecting us against unreasonable searches and seizures. And that's what this whole thing is. All of what I refer to as the pandemic policing deals with Fourth Amendment issues in denying us of certain freedoms. And just like you, and just like most of the people that you and I know, we are very safety conscious, and we don't want to expose ourselves, nor do we want anybody else to be exposed to undue risk. Okay, we don't want that because we understand that any type of virus, any type of pandemic can seriously injure you and it can kill you. And that there are the high-risk populations that are especially being threatened by this pandemic. But here's what I look at. I look at the numbers and I look at the science. I don't become emotionally captured like the politicians do and like the media does, which causes sheer panic. And I don't care if you're talking about the mainstream media, the liberal media, the CNN. Hell, I've even seen Fox News do it. And they're uninformed. You know, let me give you a great example. They list Texas as being a red state. I don't mean a red state politically, but a red state meaning, you know, high incidence of COVID-19. And what they do is they just look at the state and how many cases of COVID-19 they are, but they don't compare that to the population of the state of Texas, which is about 29, almost 30 million people. And so when you take a look really of the COVID-19 cases versus hospitalization versus deaths, it's really not much to project it as a red state. You have to compare apples with apples and oranges with oranges. So some of the things that I am seeing with regards to law enforcement's response to this, and again, I want to say that probably about 98% of all the law enforcement officers that I know, both retired and currently working, are totally against pandemic politics and totally against pandemic policing. That's not our job. In the law enforcement community, and with something like this, our job is education. That's our job. We're not the social police. We're not the health police, and we shouldn't be. Our job is to educate. Now, if people don't want to be educated and they don't want to maintain social distancing or anything like that, look, you can't fix stupid. But why do you want to be so overly intrusive to downright go out and arrest people and cite them and harass them?
And beat them up.
And beat them up, sure. Or point guns at people because of something that you don't even know the scientific scope, and you don't even know what the real science is. And so let me just kind of point out, compare and contrast. So last week up in Calumet County, Wisconsin, and that's a state that I've done a little bit of law enforcement training in for a whole number of agencies, we found that two Calumet County deputies, a male and a female, went out on an anonymous neighbor call. Somebody snitching off a mother because her very young daughter was playing with the next door neighbor. And that next door neighbor had been playing at their house too, because they're little kids and you know they've got all this pent up energy and it's just next door. All right. And they go out and they berate this woman. There's a video of it. It's posted on YouTube. It's posted on Facebook. Just look up Calumet County, Coulmet, Calumet County. And the male deputy is telling this woman that you are going to tell your daughter that she is not allowed to go play with friends. That, to me, became a detention. The female is saying, what's your name? I want your name. I want your personal information. That's a detention because legally, any time that you get into a conversation as a law enforcement officer where you order or direct someone to do that, that changes it from being a consensual encounter where two people are consenting to the conversation. And now you've crossed into the Fourth Amendment where now it's a detention where the person that you're dealing with reasonably believes that they can no longer go about their business, but they have to respond and obey your directions, orders, or commands. That you've got to have a higher standard of proof called reasonable suspicion in order to do that. There was clearly no offense committed in their presence. That's just one. So I started looking up the facts and figures of COVID-19 in Calumet County, Wisconsin. And you know what I found, Linda? I found that people 39 years and younger, there had been zero deaths. the deaths that had taken place and the vast, vast majority of people that contracted COVID-19 were people in their 80s and their 90s, which is very consistent nationally with the high-risk group. But there had been zero incidents of COVID infection and zero incidents of death. So let me tell you why that's important, and I want to hear your thoughts. It's important because in the Supreme Court decisions that deals with detention, arrests, and uses of force, the Supreme Court has, and the lower courts, have consistently said you balance the governmental need, which means for just regular people, you know, how serious is this and, you know, who's at risk, to the intrusion upon the individual, meaning what level of enforcement action that you take, you detain, you arrest, or you use force. And when there is no factual governmental need, when the statistics show that it's medically insignificant that you would catch COVID-19 as a child or even as an adult, other than a really old people, you cannot intrude upon civil rights and civil liberties like that.
Well, I totally agree. And, you know, as a parent with small kids, I'm just looking at, let's say where we live, Ron. I see our neighbors outside. I see them. I know that they have been hunkered down in their house just like we have for a long time. I have no fear that they have coronavirus. If I had a small child now and they had a small child, I would absolutely let my child go over there because they're my neighbor. I can see what they're doing. I can see how they're living, and vice versa. I have the right as a parent to make that judgment for my child and my family. And for the government to take that away from me, I think is extremely intrusive. And that goes with the other cases that we just had.
Oh, we're going to talk a couple of them.
I want to talk about the bar.
But I want you to keep, because I enjoy this conversation with you, because like you said, I come from more of a legal, forensic, medical side of it, and you come from the human interest side. And I agree with every single thing you're saying. And I think your key point here is don't treat us like children. We're adults. We're common sense people. We know a little bit about the world, and we certainly know a lot about an immediate environment, and we can make decisions, not the government making decisions for us.
Well, absolutely. I mean, how dare they come into her home and tell her who her child can play with? I just that just is so intrusive to me. I mean, this is communistic to me.
Well, you know, let's talk about this case that I think everybody has seen by now, and that's this brand new case this week in New York City, where the police are going out and they are making an arrest for someone that was not practicing social distancing. And I think he resisted. Okay, I think he resisted arrest, physically resisted. Well, when you physically resist arrest, you know, the police are going to subdue you and they're going to use force to do it. And having had that happen to me, you know, many times and had to physically subdue someone and use force to subdue that person, I totally get that. So I don't blame the officers for that. But I want to talk about the circumstances. But what happened in that same incident is while these officers have got this guy down on the ground, they've used physical force to take him to the ground. There's three or four officers involved in this, and they're handcuffing this person. And of course, he's screaming like crazy, and people all around these officers are angered, and they're screaming. Another man approaches. This is on the video. Another man approaches the officers, but he's about 30 feet away, and I think he's screaming at the officers too. An officer breaks away, so he violates officer safety, protecting his officers, and he closes the gap. He closes the gap and goes out about 25 feet to take this guy on, and he points a taser at this guy, so he's already brandishing force. Now, truth be told, I can't hear what the guy is saying because they blocked that out of the video. But what happens is the man stands still. He opens up his arms. The officer sees that, as an aggressive gesture. I looked at it. I watched it about 20 times. I didn't see it as an aggressive gesture. And the officer came up to the guy and punched him out. Basically punched him, took him to the ground, and started repeatedly punching him again. Okay.
Well, and there's a lawsuit that's going to happen that's going to cost, was it New York?
New York City.
Yeah.
Well, the guy, by the way, I will mention this. Upon initial review by his own department, he's on administrative leave.
Well, as he should
okay.
be.
Okay. Well,
first of all, that police chief in that particular
borough,
wherever he was, should never have put his officers in that position.
That's my point.
Yes. That was totally unfair to do to the officers. The officers are trying to do what they're told, but you have to remember that officers are just people as well. Officers live in the same kind of way that everybody else lives. So their families are isolated as well. Their stresses are high as well. And now they have to go out and deal with this. And in a city where there is the highest COVID-19 infection and death rate in the whole country.
You know, and that's exactly right. And I'm not trying to say that there's no risk in New York City, because you just outlined it, and it's a forensic fact that there is. But it's so incongruent what happens. So Governor Cuomo and Bill de Blasio, who's the mayor of New York City, jointly say that the state of New York and New York City has a zero tolerance policy for social distancing violations. But yet, you see police officers driving by people that are violating social distancing.
Sure.
I mean, you could do it 24/7 if you wanted to. So clearly the officers themselves are not obeying the edict of zero tolerance policy. Obviously, they are tolerating all sorts of social distancing violations, okay? And then all of a sudden, arbitrarily and capriciously picking on, you know, a couple of people and getting into a situation where you beat a man because he's pissed off, because you are arresting someone else for a social distance violation. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And again, you know, shame on you, de Blasio, shame on you, Cuomo, and shame on you, the New York Police Commissioner and the Bureau Commander and the Bureau Chief, for placing your officers, who are just stressed out to the max, in a situation where this happens. I'm telling you, some citizen or some officer is eventually going to lose their life over this.
Well, and the city is going to be sued over this, and they're going to lose a lot of money over this. And how do the citizens feel about losing even more than they've lost? Listen, if that guy wasn't social distancing, okay, again, he's an adult. Everybody around him has the choice of distancing from him. So at some point, you've got to stop treating these people like children. And if the guy gets coronavirus because he's not doing what he's supposed to do, then so be it. And if the people around him get coronavirus from him because they didn't social distance from him, you know, I gotta say, I'm sorry, but that's the way that it is.
Now, I want to add something to this that nobody has considered yet. I haven't heard this on television. I haven't heard this from my colleagues in the law enforcement, medical, or forensic communities. But just consider this for a second. Who has, and I'm not doing this to disparage the law enforcement officers. I mean, we've got a law enforcement boy, right? We have a first responder family, for God's sakes. I'm not saying this in any disparaging way. I'm just saying it is for something to consider. And that is, look at the amount of contacts that first responders and law enforcement officers have with the public every day, including lengthy contacts, lengthy physical contacts. This was a great example of a lengthy physical contact. And look at the percentage of law enforcement officers and first responders that are contracting coronavirus. And we've also lost a few of them. Okay, so compare and contrast that to what you want the public to do. When you come in contact with the public as a law enforcement officer, I'm more concerned about you than I'm concerned about my fellow citizen who might be staying inside his house, not having, any contact with people. I'm more concerned about the police officers that have made contact with me.
Well, sure, and that officer, if he was concerned about this guy being sick, He just exposed himself, you know, 10 times over by having physical contact with him.
You know, Linda, it just, it doesn't make sense. I want to have another cup of coffee with you. And I've got a very recent case that really angered me.
Yeah, I've got a few too.
That I want to talk about. So let's grab that second cup of coffee.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, we're coming around the bend with our last cup of coffee, and I've got one more on my side, more law enforcement case I want to talk about, and this happened just the other day in Odessa, Texas, which is up in Ector County. So just to kind of picture it for our listeners and followers, Odessa's up in the north part of Texas, and it's near Midland. And it's actually called the Odessa-Midland metropolitan area. And the total population of Midland-Odessa, because we're talking a couple of counties up there, is about 278,000 people. And the Ector County, where Odessa is located, is 166,000 people. And the population of Odessa itself, being a metropolitan city, is about 120,500 people, give or take, pretty close to 2019 population statistics. So the other day, there was a bar that the bar owner said, you know what, enough is enough. We're not seeing any issues here in our county to speak of, and people are going nuts, and I'm going broke. I'm going to open up my bar. Well, the governor hadn't opened up this area yet because, you know, as you know,
He hasn't opened up bars
and massage parlors and hair salons and, you know, all of this stuff. So anyway, they decided to have a peaceful protest at this bar, and people, you know, drinking at this bar. Nobody's drunk. Nobody's intoxicated. It's a peaceful protest. They have American flags. These are good Texans, and they're American citizens. Guess what happens? The Ector County Sheriff's Department deploys a SWAT team in a military armored vehicle to go close down this bar. And there's video of it. And I would really encourage our followers and listeners to get onto YouTube or to Google it. This is in Odessa, Texas, in Ector, Ector County. And what I saw, Linda, I got to tell you, it scared the bejesus out of me. This military SWAT vehicle, and I understand the reason to have one, okay? Having done tactical, I understand you need a vehicle like that. My question is, did you need this vehicle for this particular encounter? And uniformed officers get out with automatic weapons, and they take these people on, approaching them with guns drawn. Can you imagine this? They pop out of this vehicle and approach these people with American flags, and they've got their hands up, they got their hands out. Nobody that I saw was armed. I'm not saying whether anybody could be armed, because in Texas, hell, everybody's armed. But there was no risk whatsoever that I could see. And they ended up arresting everybody.
How many people were there?
It looked to me like there were 20 or 30 people there. They ended up arresting everybody, according to the news reports, including the bartender and the bar owner, shutting the bar owner down and taking their license. Over social distancing violation. So let me talk to you about Ector County and Midland. Let me give you the forensic facts because I looked them all up, and these are facts as of today. So the confirmed coronavirus cases in Ector County, population 166,223 as of 2019, 85 total confirmed cases, of which over two-thirds, 59 cases, have totally recovered. Number of deaths, 4. So in a county of 166,233 people, where over two-thirds of the people that had coronavirus have recovered and you only have 4 deaths, you have that rate of intrusion. So let me just do the statistics for you a little bit more to put it in perspective. If you live in Ector County, your chances of contracting COVID-19 are 0.00050. Your chances of dying from COVID-19, if you live in Ector County, 0.00024. We would say in medicine, that is medically insignificant. So when we talk about balancing the governmental need, how serious is this? Where's the imminent risk to the individual? Who can be harmed? In comparison to bringing out the SWAT team, an armored SWAT vehicle, officers holding and pointing and challenging people with automatic weapons, I think there's going to be a huge problem there.
I do too. And again, you have 20 or 30 people who have made an adult-informed decision to go over there and have a drink. You know, who? I don't know how close they were standing together, how far. I don't know. You know, theoretically, they could have been social distancing inside the bar. I don't know. But either way, those people made their own life decision based on the facts that they knew about their county. And it seems to me to be a reasonable decision. And it seems, I mean, it doesn't seem, it is such an
overreaction
to this by the sheriff. I mean, we've got to leave people alone somewhat here. This, it's gotten really out of control. And the other one that I want to talk about, go ahead.
Can I clean this up a little bit? Mm-hmm. Because it gets even worse for Ector County. It gets even worse. So let's compare and contrast H1N1 virus, the seasonal flu, a swine flu. Okay? So we know factually that it has affected hundreds of millions of people globally, okay? And it has killed millions of people globally. Millions.
Another gift from China.
Millions. That's right, another gift. But it's killed millions of people and hundreds of thousands of people in the United States. We're at, 70,000 coronavirus deaths in the United States? Well, H1N1 killed millions, okay? And hundreds of thousands in the United States. You know what we did? We did nothing. We did nothing. There were no intrusions. There have been no intrusions. Let's talk about in 2009 in Ector County, they had 2,050 cases of H1N1. Okay? That's 24 times more H1N1 cases than COVID-19 cases.
Right.
And Ector County did nothing in 2009. Zero intrusions. They didn't do anything. In 2014, you had a lot less. You had 226 cases and you had 2 deaths. Back in 2014, just a few years ago, your statistical chances of catching H1N1 back in 2014 in Ector County was 0.0088, which is about half as much as right now for COVID-19. Because now we got 4 deaths in Ector County, right? More cases at 4 deaths. But listen, my point is in Ector County, They did absolutely nothing.
No, but they didn't have these state, the president telling people to stay home, the governors telling people to stay home. Now, what's interesting to me about this whole stay-at-home thing across the country is that it's completely unequally, what do I want to say here? It's not equally served upon the people. In other words, you have...
Oh, it's arbitrary and capricious,
right,
is what you mean.
Some sheriffs who say, I'm not doing this. You know, our business is to educate. And even in Texas, I believe that our governor said the same thing, that our law enforcement's business is more to educate people rather than be arresting them. But you have some sheriffs in the country that are going totally overboard, like these people in Ector County. You have people, and like the ones in New York, and you have other law enforcement professionals who are saying, I'm not having my guys do this.
You know, I am so grateful in our county, in the Texas Hill Country, and when we have just a remarkable chief of police in our town, and we have just a remarkable sheriff in our county. And, you know, you and I know both of these people. They're friends of ours. They are wonderful law enforcement administrators. They really understand the people in our county. They understand the stresses that the businesses and the people are experiencing right now. And I've spoken with both of them about these issues, and both of them told me, and it was so gratifying to hear this, we're not getting involved in that. Okay, our job is to educate our people. Our job is to support our people, to try to do everything that we can to lessen the burden on our people. Okay, and they both understand that you can't fix stupid, right? And people are going to go out and they're going to, you know, do the things that they do and violate social distancing. But they understand that they are not the social police and they're not the health police.
Right. And if somebody is going into the supermarket and, you know, spitting on food or coughing on food, that's a whole nother conversation. But going into your local friend's bar and having a drink or having your child play with the next door neighbor, those are decisions that we can make as adults. And they have no business, you know, citing us, arresting us, pointing guns at us, those types of things, beating us up for it. Now, I do want to talk about the other case that bothers me.
Go ahead.
Okay. So you have, again, in Texas, don't remember the city or the county, you have a hairdresser who has decided to open her shop to some patrons. And boy, I wish they'd open up around us because I really need to get my hair done.
And you did mine.
I had to do yours.
And you didn't do such a bad job. I don't know what I'm spending $20 a month for. You can just do my hair in the bathroom.
I know. But you can't do mine. So therein lies the
I
problem.
Could. It just wouldn't look good.
So, yeah, heaven knows what I'd get. But anyway, so she opens up because why? She's going to go out of business. She can't pay her bills. Don't forget that during this time, rents still happen, utilities still happen, things still required to be paid, house payments.
And you know, she also has other stylists that work in her shop that have got kids, that have got families,
sure,
that are making zero money, and they're not getting this, you know, stimulus package thing. And you know, these days, you know, they've given people like $1,200 or something like that, right? Can you imagine how quickly $1,200 goes away?
Well, it's not going to even pay anybody's rent.
I mean, you got to pay rent, you got to pay mortgage, you got to, yeah, but look at all the stuff you got to pay for.
Sure. So she decided to do some hair, and the police came in and arrested her.
Undercover police.
Okay, I did not.
Yeah, so they went in and basically did a sting on her and then popped her for that.
So she goes before the judge, and the judge, you know, really, you know, reams her out and tells her, you know,
she's selfish,
how irresponsible
she's
is, selfish, you know, and she basically says, I'm anything but, I'm trying to survive here.
I'm trying to help my people.
I'm trying to help my people survive here. And, you know, I mean, we're carefully doing what we're doing. Well, he would have none of it. And he said, you can either completely shut down and commit that you won't do this again,
And apologize.
And apologize. Apologize like a two-year-old.
Right.
Or you can go sit in jail. And she said, I will go sit in jail because I am not going to do that. And, I'm doing the right thing.
And he sentenced her to 7 days in jail because she was open for 7 days. Okay. Now, when you take a look at what's happening across the United States, and it's starting to happen in Texas, which seriously bothers me as a Tejano, is that you're getting this advocate, what do you, I call it judicial advocacy, social
yes.
warrior
yep.
BS. And this judge sentenced her to more time in jail, okay, well, she will be at greater risk of contracting COVID-19 than she would have been in her shop. And he is letting people that are felons out. We are letting felons out
in
the state of Texas.
Yes.
There are people that are doing DUIs with injuries. There are people that are doing domestic violence. Sexual predators are being released from jail and prison. Look what's going on in California, for God's sakes. Look at what's going on in Colorado and some of these states. Are you kidding me, Judge? You put this poor woman, this mother that did nothing, into jail for 7 days. I'll tell you what, and I had the name of this judge. I'm going to put it out in a future show, but I'm going to take a close watch of that judge and his court, and I'm going to find out what kind of evil felons this judge is releasing from jail or giving less sentences than he gave this poor woman and a business person. And I'm going to put it right back out there on Talking While Married.
Well,
you follow us and you find out, listeners.
That is a whole nother subject that it absolutely we need to talk about, because the releasing of these felons into society because of coronavirus, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't care if they get it in jail.
And you know what? They're releasing, especially in California, I don't know about Texas yet, but in California, they are releasing them in jail, not because they have COVID-19, but they're worried that they're going to get COVID-19. And just this last week, California released 7 serious sexual child predators from prison or jail.
So,
okay, 7 of those people.
So here's what they're worried about. They're worried that they might get coronavirus in jail, but they're not worried about all of our children who these people are going to harm for the rest of their life, because sexual predators do not rehabilitate. They continue to commit their crimes. And in fact, I've heard several that have gotten out and have already, you know, committed the same crimes over.
Well, you know, in California, you know, or Calizuela, as we call it, they had a guy in Glendora that they arrested 3 times in one day for committing felonies. And they would arrest him for felony. One was a car theft. All right. Arrested him for that. Released him with a citation on the spot. Boom. He's gone. 2 hours later, commits another felony. They catch him again. They cite him. They released him. He commits another felony. I mean, this guy was going berserk out there. But let's talk about this arbitrary and capricious application of this pandemic politics. And I want to pick on Governor Gruesom Newsom over there in Calizuela. And that is, what does he do? He's pissed off at Republicans, primarily in Orange County, all right? And so he had all the beaches closed. Then he opened the beaches, except for the beaches in Orange County,
right,
where he was getting pushback.
Which is interesting, because he opened them in San Diego, who has more coronavirus than
Orange County. Exactly right. And so the mayors in Orange County, and in other counties, by the way, sheriffs and mayors, are saying, especially way up in Northern California, which is sort of its own state. They call it the state of Jefferson up there. We have friends that live up there. And they're saying, look, we're not gonna obey these edicts. We're going to open up businesses. And the sheriffs up there have said, we're not going to enforce this stuff. You know, common sense and constitutional sheriffs are saying, we're not going to enforce this. These are not laws. These are not legislated laws. Anyway, so they closed the beaches in Orange County, or they closed parks, they closed this. Let me tell you something. The vast majority of people that have contracted coronavirus and have died from coronavirus have been inside residences, have been inside
nursing homes,
assisted care living facilities. And again, we're talking about our high risk population of people, you know, 80 and older that have predispositions to or low immunity rates because they've got diabetes, they've got heart disease, cardiovascular disease, they've had pneumonia, you know, things like that. And so what they're doing is keeping people out of the very environments that kills coronavirus, or that the chances of getting coronavirus are almost scientifically insignificant, such as parks and beaches where you've got ambient air and airflow, and the heat from the sun kills it. And what are they doing? They are denying those people opportunities to use those beaches and parks. I thought you'd talk about the human interest part of that.
Well, it's not just the physical part. It's also the mental part, because people, when they are cooped up for and not working for long periods of time like this, and, you know, let's face it, Ron, a lot of people are not necessarily living with people they get along with or like.
Oh, absolutely. Right? That's why the domestic violence and family violence rate is up.
Exactly. So people need to get that escape. And to take that away from them is to cause more mental anguish to people, more physical harm to people, just all kinds of things that are going to be really hard to come back from some people. We would be better, and some states are doing a good job at starting to open up, but we would be better opening up. Now, Newsom is, you know, in himself.
He's sort of a political aberration.
He's a disaster.
Right.
And by the way, speaking of Newsom, you know, this is a guy that has bragged about California having the fifth best economy in the world, that, you know, he's got all of this money, yet he is begging the federal government for money to pay their bills over there. So do you have the money or do you not, Governor Newsom?
And
you can't tell people that they can't go outside in California. You can't tell them they can't go to the beach. And, you know, you've stopped people from working in California, and now you're extending it through the end of May. The people can't tolerate this financially or emotionally or physically.
Yeah, you know, the businesses are not set up. Most businesses, small businesses, are really not set up to work remotely. Okay,
no.
They're not. Now, you can get away with doing it with your big, you know, billion-dollar donors like Google and Facebook and, you know, Silicon Valley and things like that. But you can't do it with hair salons, and you can't do it with markets and stores and things like that. And also California having the highest rents, the highest expenses. It's one of the economically highest places to live, right?
Well, and the amount of money that they're paying in unemployment in California is just, it's going to sink that state. It's going to sink the people there, because they're going to be so taxed now for having all of these bills that nobody's going to be able to live there.
Well, you know, let's continue this conversation, which has become quite lively, Mrs. Martinelli, and let's talk about the repercussions of these decisions, because I love what you always say. With decisions, there is always the unintended consequences.
That's right. So we'll take this up next time.